Under the skin. Welcome to Under the Scales. Before we start, I want to mention that Under the Scales is a proud member of the Osiris family of podcasts. You can check out more music and culture podcasts at osirispod.com. We have a mobile studio in force today, and we drove to
Asbury Park, Tom.
Yeah, sorry.
Home of Bruce Springsteen.
New Jersey.
So yeah, the Under the Scales mobile studio is in Asbury Park, and I'm here with my co-host, sometimes co-host, Tebow Thomas.
There was a lot of quotes in that.
Air quotes were being thrown around.
You can't see that, but the quotes were all over the place.
I have a lot of names, too.
And right next to my co-host, Tebow, is a good friend, Brad Sands. Hey, Brad.
Hello.
So why are we having this here in Asbury Park, Brad?
Well, I just, you know, I've always loved the Jersey Shore, and I thought, you know, rather than go to, like, Princeton or, you know, the Rhombus, right, let's go to the Stone Pony. No, actually, Primus is playing tonight with Mastodon.
Right.
And big rock show, so I came in town for that, and
you're the manager now of Primus.
I am the manager of Primus, yeah. So now I show up to the gigs at like 5 or 6 o'clock and critique everyone, and they hate me. So, like, I'm the manager.
Yeah. So, forgive me for not knowing the hierarchy of management in the world of rock music, but road manager is what your position and title was at Fish.
For Fish, I was road manager, tour manager, and basically, you know, there's my joke was always that, you know, the tour manager has to go to bed with the band and wake up with Palooza, who was the manager of Fish at the time, you know. So, like, you're the one who doesn't get a lot of sleep.
Right.
So the tour manager puts the tour together, is responsible for everything out on tour. You know, then you have the production manager who's responsible for all the staging equipment, things like that, you know, like lights, sound, and all that. You know, then you have the backline guys who deal with the band gear.
Right.
And then you have, you know, well, let me rephrase this. At the top of the food chain is Chris Kuroda, because, you know, that's how it works in Fish World. There's a manager, then there's, you know. Otherwise, the lighting guys are near the bottom.
For those that don't know, Brad Sands was the road or tour manager for Fish for a long time. And the three of the people in this room, we experienced Fish going from extremely small venues, being a very small band, all the way up to and
festivals.
Festivals in Madison Square Garden and whatever. And so I'm privileged kind of to be in the room and relive some of the memories.
Yeah, some good ones.
Yeah, really good ones. So in one of my podcasts with Big Phil, it's called Phil and Friends, I learned something that was new to me. And that was how you kind of were introduced into the Fish scene through Big Phil.
Right. Well, okay, first of all, like, that's not true.
Big Phil?
Yeah. So the way it happened is I grew up in Reading, Pennsylvania, and I had a job where I used to fix cash registers and computers. Like, I'd go into, like, grocery stores and fix these things. And I was,
whether they wanted them fixed
I
or
was
not.
Terrible at it. Okay. I was the worst. And, like, you know, the express lane would break down every day, and it'd be like, the number 7 key doesn't work. I'm like, well, why don't you just move the express lane over? And so I would go in there, and I was terrible at it. And I got tickets to see the Dead at the Boston Garden in 91, and I was on call that weekend. So I was like, well, fuck it, I'm going. I couldn't get anybody to cover for me. So I was at the show, and I had a pager. You know, like, it went off, and I was like, oh, shit, you know, like, and I went into the payphone of the Boston Garden, like, and called into this store, and they're like, we can't shut down the store, the computer's offline, you know, and I'm like, did you try unplugging it, plugging it back in? They're like, yes, we tried that. I'm like, I'll be right over, and I just hung up the phone. I was like, well, that'll be the end of that job.
You never went back.
No, they fired me, like, the next day.
By the way, they're still on.
They're still waiting.
Like, I think the Acme has been shut down now. So I went home and went to see Fish in Ithaca, the State Theater, the Capitol Theater. And then my friends decided, this was like 9:25, 9:26, 91. And my friends and I decided we're going to drive across the country to see the Dead on my birthday and Halloween in 91 in Oakland.
But had you seen Fish yet?
Yes, yeah, I had seen it. I'd seen, well, what happened was this guy, his name was Greg, that was a friend of mine who had dreads. He had gone to a rainbow gathering in Vermont, came home, changed his name to Dreamer, but but he brought back a lawn boy with him, you know, and I had an apartment and we would play this album over and over and we were like, wow, this is fucking weird. Like, you know, Fishman's in the green thing, you know, like, and I remember looking at these guys and I remember it said, they thanked their parents. And I thought, what do their parents think of these guys? Look at these clowns. You know, like, Arrowhead Ranch was first. Then we went to the Bayou, went to those three. And I remember I'll get on the way into Arrowhead Ranch, there were these flyers for like, come to Amy's Farm, our free show, blah, blah, blah. And we were like, who's going to drive to Maine to see these guys? I mean, come on. You know, here it is like 10 days later, on our way to Maine. You know, like, and so then when we're driving out west, we stopped at these three shows in Arizona. And first one was a place called Chewy's in Tempe, I think, right? And then the second one was in Flagstaff. So it was the first time they played Slave in a while. And Trey also shaved his head. Then we went to this place in New Mexico. We were there. We were there early because we were just, what the fuck are we going to do? We're in Santa Fe. Or, you know, the gig was right there. And then, like, they had nobody showed up to help them load in their gear. So me and my friend Dustin, we were like, do you guys want help? And they're like, sure. And we just thought it was cool. Like, we're pushing the gear and all that, you know. And Andrew Fishbeck, who was the tour manager at the time, was saying, he said, hey, do you want to sell merch tonight? And I was like, sure, why not? Cool, you know? Like, and so I'm selling the merch. And he's like, hey, we're going to be hiring somebody, you know, next year. Would you be interested in the job? And I'm like, inside my head, I'm thinking, fuck yeah. This is like, of course, you know? So we canceled our trip to go see the Dead. We went to the rest of the shows on the tour.
Did you work the whole time?
I bought tickets for every show, and I worked the whole time. And yeah, basically brown nosed my way right in there, right? Wow. And the reason I got the job mainly is because Kuroda was too lazy to drive too lazy to tear down the lights and couldn't drive the truck. Like, they needed like an extra guy. So I owe it to Chris, really, in the sense of like, so we were playing like Fort Collins, I think, or something. This is about a week after I'd been, you know, working for him. And Chris is like, hey, do you think you know how to tear down the lights by yourself? Like, kind of test me. I'm like, yeah, definitely, sure. He's like, all right, see you later. And he just took off. You know, like, you're right. Like, there I am. I'm like doing it. And Paul, you know, Paul Aguinock, I was like, where's Chris? I'm like, I don't know. And I'm rolling the cables and doing my best. And wow. I felt like that was the moment. At least Paul was like, okay, we can hire this kid. You know, and then so my first official paid gig was that New Year's 91 at the Worcester New Odd. You know, so.
I forget how this differs from Big Phil, because his thing was,
Big Phil, I think
that he introduced you. Well, that you and he got introduced
through the Dead,
through tape trading and stuff like that.
Right, and Big Phil, like, I can't remember exactly what he said, but he wasn't the one who introduced me to the music of Fish. Okay. But he was, you know, he was the one who, you know, like all those tapes that are out there from 93 and 94, those are all my soundboards from my little deck. And Big Phil was kind of the one who like kind of pushed me into doing that. Nice. You know, like,
nice.
And yeah, Big Phil was kind of, you know, he's a great guy. He's always like giving tapes.
He's
all
a super
stuff.
Fan, like one of the earliest super fans.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
So yeah, I was just basically right place at the right time. I mean, I never was like, I want to work in the music industry or I want to be a roadie or anything.
Do you remember what you got paid for that first?
Yeah, we were getting paid $250 a week. And no per diem, but they paid for all your food. You know, I was like, it was like the greatest time of my life. That's, I mean, perfect. You know, $250 awesome. A week. That's not a lot of money. And I started out, I drove the truck at night and I drove the van in the morning and I did merch basically and helped set up the lights. Like that was my first job.
Was this the era of the Jemp truck then?
Jemp. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. This was Jemp. And that lasted up until probably 90, the beginning of 93, I think we'd moved on into buses and stuff like that. You know? Right.
It was really kind of startlingly fast.
Yeah.
The progression from, you know,
bar to
theater. Bar,
it's
but also
like,
looking from backstage, what happened. Like,
right.
you know, the stuff that the fans can't see. They see the rooms getting bigger, but the stuff that we can see was amazing. What was going on? First there's like one truck, then it's a semi, then it's five semi,
And
then there's every band has a bus.
Yeah, then you know, it's like I mean. One of the first, like, because we would play, you know, when I first started, we were playing, like, you know, you're like, oh my God, you got to get to the Chestnut Cabaret, you know? And then you get there and it's a fucking dump. You know what I mean? Like, it's terrible.
We've made it.
You know, like, yeah, it's like, oh, cool, you know? And then you go to the Spectrum. And then you go to the Tower.
Yeah, to the Spectrum.
Yeah.
It's a dump.
You go to the Tower and then, like, it's like the Man and then the Spectrum, you know? It's like, it all happened within like a year and a half. I mean, really.
It really did.
We went from like the Tower in May of 92 to playing the Spectrum and like the, did like on the, I don't know if we played the Spectrum in 93. I feel like maybe on that New Year's run we might have.
I think so. And I think MSG may have been the first time was in
94. MSG the first time was 94. Like 12:30. We played MSG on the 30th and Boston Garden on the
'Cause to Trey, that was always like an aspiration.
I mean, I think for any musician, MSG is the place. You know what I mean? Like, you can't, you know.
I mean, all the other places. Jimmy Page and Robert Plant.
Yeah, exactly. Helter Skelter and the Stones, you know. Like, you know, it's like,
right.
You know.
Right. So, one of the times that I'll always cherish in my memory, and Tebow, you didn't come until later, or the second one.
Tebow was like a Touch of Grey type of Fish fan. Like after Heavy Things came out,
that's not a subtle insult at all.
Yeah,
I'm laughing.
Yeah, was the first Europe tour.
Yeah,
and
the one we're opening for the Violent Femmes.
Okay, maybe not the first one then.
Second, yeah. Okay. We opened when I first started. There's some funny stories from this, but. We went to Europe in the summer of 92. We opened for the Violent Femmes.
Okay, this is not the one I'm thinking of.
Yeah, and...
Were they one set
deals? They played like 45 minutes in front of the, you know, and like... Violent Femmes were actually great. I mean, they were like really cool. They great live band, you know, but the crowd was definitely like, you know, what the hell is this? You know what I mean? And like, especially like places like France and those, you know.
They weren't famous then? They didn't have a following?
The Violent Femmes were. Oh, okay. We were, you know. And,
Like, because on Santana tour, where Santana, it was like a rotating group of maybe six bands.
Yeah.
And then Santana, you know, batted cleanup every night.
Yeah.
I found the audience tremendously respectful.
Yeah, except for the one gig in France, which we get to. But here, I'll finish the story.
Oh, sure.
So we're opening for the Violent Femmes, and there's two good stories from that. The first one is like, you know, like we hired this European tour manager. His name was Zop, you know, and like he was kind of driving us around, telling us what to do. And we were just, you know, whatever, you know. So for some reason, we flew into London, rented a van and drove the van to a ferry and took a ferry to freaking Hamburg. You know, it was like a 20-hour ferry ride over the North Sea. It was like, you know, like the boat was just like, and we're all just laying in our bunks, just dying, you know, like just get this over with, you know. But we're driving on, because we had landed, it's like an overnight flight. We'd landed, we're all tired, and I was sitting in the middle of the front seat, and Andrew Fishbeck was sitting over here, and like what would normally be the driver's side, and then this guy Zop was driving. And, you know, we're all got tired. I start falling asleep, I'm nodding off, you know. And I kind of wake up and I look over to Andrew and he's like this. And I thought he was the driver. And I grabbed him and, yo, 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 yo. He's like, what the fuck are you doing? And everyone's just like, what is it? You know, it's like, you know, so that was our intro to Europe. And then, so when we played the Brixton Academy, I think. And there were these two guys, these Violent Femmes, like kind of punk fans, who just stood in front of the band, back turned, giving Trey the finger the entire set. And it was really kind of funny because knowing Trey, he literally spent the entire time trying to win them over. You know, he was just going for it, you know? Like,
Did he ever win? I don't think so.
They're going to really like this Bowie.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But yeah, then the other European, that was probably, because we had done gigs with Santana in the summer, that summer of 93, maybe. And, 92, summer of 92. And, you know, that was like a good move for him because we probably weren't getting paid that much. And like the lawn was just filled with fish heads. I mean, and that's when you could see, it was like, man, this band is, you know, Great Woods was literally like, pavilion was half full and the lawn was just packed with like kids paying for $20, you know? And, You know, we did this one show in New Mexico, or I think it was in Santa Fe, at the Santa Fe Downs, you know, famous dead show place. And it was in Vail, some show. It was a lot of Santana fans, you know. And Carlos used to have the band come out and sit in with them, you know, and jam with them. And Fishman one time came out with a vacuum cleaner, right? And, you know, he just did this solo that was just like, he was so unaware of his surroundings. Like, I mean, it went on for like
way too long.
Way too long. And I remember Carlos would always stand in, and he just went back and kind of leaned on his riser. And like, you just see Trey is just going, oh my God, he's killing me. You know, it was just like, you know, it was kind of amazing though.
You got to kind of tailor your show to the audience.
I mean, it was just like, you know, a bunch of like, you know,
if Carlos was on stage with you, I mean, don't have a long, elongated.
Like Trey, I would imagine like any of the guys know, like, you know, you play your solo when you're sitting in, then you get in, get out. Fishman had no idea. He found the note of, you know, the vibration of life or something, you know, like just going for it. So anyway,
some of the Europe trip things that I'm thinking about also involved a ferry trip. We I think started in Ireland.
It was Ireland, and then
we did Dublin
two nights,
and then I believe we were playing in
Royal Albert Hall,
England. Yeah. After that,
right?
And so we did have a ferry crossing, and I remember like Trey's mom, Dinah, was on the bus, and also the way I remember it,
because sometimes they make you get off the bus, sometimes you can stay.
We stayed on and partied on the ferry,
yeah.
And but I think there were some people that went to a concert in Ireland and then didn't know that they were going to get off the bus in England. At that party.
Oh, really? Yeah, it could be. I don't know. Well, I'll tell you the other story of the summer 92 thing was we played Roskilde Festival, you know, and that's the big festival in Denmark, you know, like, yeah. And we were all like, wow, look at this. This was amazing. And like, you know, a couple things at that festival, like Nirvana was the headliner.
Oh my God.
And Denmark the same weekend was playing in the European Soccer Championship against Germany. And this is like the Cleveland Browns playing the Patriots. You know what I mean? Denmark being the Cleveland Browns. And so they paused the festival to show the game on the screens. And then Denmark beats Germany. And then Nirvana comes on stage. I mean, I get goosebumps talking about it. It was like the greatest concert moment of my life. Because like Nirvana, like peak 90, you know, 92 Nirvana.
Oh my God.
And then we played a tent the next day with this band Evo Papasal's Bulgarian wedding band played right before us, which became like Fishman's favorite band of all time. But that festival was the impetus for, I remember Trey saying to everybody, like, we got to do something like this at home. Like, we got to do one of these.
That's
but
when
not,
Trey...
not being like, oh, we need to do a multi-band festival. Well, we need to do our own festival. And that was 92. And obviously it took 4 years, but...
Yeah.
Roskilde is the sort of the genesis. I mean, Amy's Farm was one thing, but Roskilde was such on another level. It was like, how do we then take this and at home and do it ourselves? You know,
festivals back then were different than they are now. Everyone now takes them with a grain of salt because there's so many and they're all multi-band.
Yeah.
Fish doing one by themselves and building a city and all that stuff, that was really groundbreaking.
Well, and there was none of them in America. I mean, Europe had always had like the kind of the Bonnaroos or whatever. Europe had all those, you know, like for a long time. Roskilde, Glastonbury, those were going for years, you know.
Okay.
But in America, they didn't have any of that kind of stuff, you know. Like, you know, a festival in America was like Lollapalooza, which was like traveling around from amphitheater to amphitheater.
Oh, okay.
Do you know what I mean? So it was like...
There was
no like build a place and go. And I mean, you know, that had happened obviously with like Woodstock and stuff like that, but then it kind of didn't.
Away.
Everyone was amazingly shocked at Clifford Ball driving in there.
Yeah.
And seeing that city and Beacon of Light in the World of Flight. Yeah. The weird themes that ran through it and tremendously artistic and also having... legit artists that were creating a lot of those things.
Yeah.
It was fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and that was sort of the approach. Like, I remember we were having like a site meeting and I said to, I think Trey might have been there or something, and I said, oh, we should like get an AM station to broadcast traffic reports like they do like when you drive into Disney World. And Trey's like, well, why wouldn't we just play music? What do we have? Traffic. Who cares about that? I was like, yeah, great idea.
If there's traffic, you have music.
Well, that's where the bunny came from, you know? And then it became this cool thing on its own. It was always...
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I think always the dynamic with...
Wasn't the bunny the badger once? I forget.
Maybe. I don't know.
I'm looking forward to...
It may have been the badger, but...
Yeah,
you know,
I think it was.
The badger sounds like a name that Colton would have come up with because he went to Wisconsin, you know?
But I think the bunny is still a thing. I think...
Yeah. It took on a life of its own. And
yeah.
It took on its own. People would, you know, like...
And it turns out traffic reports wouldn't have been anything apart from...
You're stuck in traffic.
Listen to this next song.
Yeah. So here you are at Big Cypress Radio, and you're not moving. Here's another classic hit by the Blue.
Being an insider, we knew about an acoustic set coming up, and we knew some stuff. And also to be awake instead of asleep for late night surprise sets and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That was kind of fun. We would. Was that the flatbed or was that the Great
White? First one was a flatbed.
Yeah. And that was obviously their idea, and they were like... Because that was the whole thing. It was like, what can we do to make this different? Like, let's have, instead of, you're supposed to have, one porta potty for every 20 people. They're like, let's make it one for every 10. And let's get big ones. And let's have hand washing stations. And it was all these things. And it's like, and also, let's do, I remember one of the big ones was car camping, Most festivals at the time, at Glastonbury, is still this way. You park your car and then you drag all your shit to the tent.
Right.
You don't and it was like...
You don't put your tent up right next to the car.
Which is, then you can lock your stuff.
It's sort of an innovation.
It's kind of
all these festivals now, in a way, copied.
Yeah. When we did Festival 8 at Coachella, the Coachella site, they had never done car camping, And we're like, no, you have to. We're not doing this BS where you park your car, drag your stuff across, and do lockers. And now, I don't want to take credit for Coachella being two weekends, but they learned so much from that festival because they moved the stage over. Their whole VIP thing is now where the Fish VIP was. That used to be backstage. It changed the whole thing. And the car camping, though, really, because car camping at least makes it palatable to camp in the sense of you can still go in your car and lay down if you really need to.
Exactly. So the Great Went was interesting because I got to fly in with you guys.
Right.
That was now that, as things progressed, Fish occasionally now had a jet.
Now they had the jet, because it was far to get up there. Limestone was, and that was another thing, we did the Clifford Bowl in Plattsburgh, which, is basically 25 miles from Burlington. So you figured, okay.
Perfect.
But Maine, it was a little bit at the time, it was almost done in the sense of okay, let's do this so we can kind of make sure it doesn't get too crazy.
Put it as far away as you can from
Yeah. And then just everybody came, And
everyone came.
Yeah,
And clogged streets people are still talking about
it. Trey says it from the stage, something about where the, I forget now, fourth largest city in Maine.
Yeah.
Maybe the largest.
Maybe, I can't remember.
Maybe Portland has 80,000 people. Yeah. but yeah, it's and it's funny for me, Lemon Wheel and the Great Went kind of blend together for some reason.
Right.
I can't distinguish which one. We had the burning sculpture. And which one had
Elephant
the like,
walk.
There was one with the orchestra, you know?
I'm a bad person to ask these things.
I'll tell one of my favorite stories was that was during the kind of years when me and Kuroda would have the Garcia parties, We would play only Jerry tunes and all our friends would come and so I had gotten the audio company to give me two speakers and an amp for it this time backstage. And remember, you and Trey were going to have, a party. And,
we had a party.
No one came. they were over at the Garcia party.
I think people went back and forth. I think we went back and forth.
Maybe you did, but because you're a loyal
friend. They're playing
Garcia. You're a loyal friend, You're hey, Tom, you guys might want to come over here.
We had Gordon Stone.
We had Gordon Stone play.
And some jugglers. We had jugglers.
Yeah. He couldn't really keep up with, a nice version of Scarlet Begonias.
In fact, I think he did do a cover. So.
Meanwhile, the PA's blasting the Grateful Dead, and you could just see. I remember a funny moment, and that was the one where Big Phil he passed out, and when Big Phil's big tree fall hard kind of thing, But yeah, it was like those two festivals, and then one of them wasn't that like the naked photo shoot. Was it one of those?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
That
know?
Was the.
But there was always show. All these cool things going on, you know, and like, and then after Lemon Wheel was
Oswego,
yeah, Camp Oswego, yeah. Which was kind of more of a.
That was more like a concert.
It was a concert. It wasn't a full blown festival, but it still had all the stuff.
Yeah. It had all the washing stations and all that. And the post
I think
office.
Fans online were saying if it has the Ferris wheel, then it's
right. Yeah, yeah. They play for 3 days. Or whatever, yeah. Three sets. Yeah. Yeah, it was a debate, and you know, and then obviously it was Big Cypress, you know, which sort of the granddaddy of them all, kind of a thing. And
right.
Like, I mean, that one was just. I mean, I remember that they were always talking about the midnight set, you know, and like because
playing through the night was one of their goals.
That, yeah. Well, yeah. I remember saying to Trey at some point that like, oh yeah, the Dead when like. And closing the Winterland like they did. They started at midnight and played till 7 a.m. or something, right? But they took set breaks and, you know, he's like, well, and your typical Trey's like, well, we're just going to play straight through. And you're like,
we're going to put the Port-a-John on the stage.
Yeah. And I remember just thinking like, they're going to play for 8 hours. That's insane, you know? And then they totally pulled it off, you know? Like, yeah, the handicapped porta potty on stage, you know?
Yeah. Exactly.
And did you just fly in on that one?
I was
with a bunch of people driving and we were stuck in that 14-hour traffic
jam. I mean, I'd been there for like a week, so it was like, but the funniest thing about it was like backstage, it looked so beautiful and all that, and it was like
really there was
nice.
a pool and
everything,
trees,
and like literally when the midnight set was over, it literally looked like, you know, Afghanistan or something. it's like the Gaza Strip back there. It was just trash, Beirut. You know, just like amazing. And like 8 hours later, it looked hours before it looked fine. You know, like, and I remember like I was just like, we got to get out of here. And I like packed up as many things as I could. Like it was kind of like. It was like pirate treasure of crystal and stuff, and like
grab some good
people
stuff.
Just grabbing everything and it was like getting it out of them. It was like get out of here, you know? you know.
I remember coming back to during the show, during that 7 hour set, coming back to our trailer backstage that you and I, Tom and I shared, and you were packing and you were spent. And it was probably like five. You still had a couple more hours. It wasn't the sun wouldn't come up.
It was like
you had gotten the word from him, I think. We're out of here.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it was just more, it was like, you know, because we were all there for like 4 or 5 days. And, you know, like, it's like being in Vegas for 4 or 5 days. By day five, you're
you want to go
like,
home.
Get me out of here, you know?
Exactly.
And,
exactly.
But that was kind of, I feel like, for in my Fish career, was sort of the peak moment, you know?
We talk about it all the time.
It was peak. That was kind of peak life in a way.
Yeah, not just Fish.
And there was
one of
the
greatest weekends of all.
Morning, that sunrise with that Velvet Sea, I'll never ever forget.
Right. Yeah.
Ever.
Yeah.
Did and, we video? We did Fish video that?
Oh yeah, it's kind of out there. I think you can see a lot of the stuff is out there.
I've seen stuff on YouTube.
Yeah. I mean, we had a whole film crew there and stuff. It's so such an undertaking. It should be. I mean, but it's kind of, I always remember Trey saying like, we should just stop now. You know, and all of us working for him go, no, we got to keep going. Yeah.
You guys kind of reminded me, and it wasn't Big Cypress, I don't think. It was one of the Air Force, decommissioned Air Force bases. Mm-hmm. But I guess any kind of airstrip like that still has a skeleton crew in it.
Right. Because
it was still somewhat active for emergencies. And
yeah, it's like
for
like where the space shuttle can land or something like that.
I believe so. Limestone. And the two people, so we took off, I think, from possibly Teterboro, New Jersey, or else Burlington, Vermont.
Yeah.
And I might have had to get my ass up there.
Yeah, yeah.
But just wanted to get on the plane.
Yeah, of course.
So I did it. So, and it was two hotshot, like retired Air Force dudes.
Yeah.
And I don't know if you remember, but I don't know much about planes at all. But this one, apparently, they were even impressed with.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, let's see what this thing can do. Yeah. And do you remember? So Trey and I were standing kind of in the doorway. Yeah. Everyone else was sitting down. But Trey and I were standing behind them watching because they said, hey, look at all this traffic.
Yeah, yeah.
And we saw that, like, I was thinking about my friends down in that traffic. And it was miles and miles and miles.
14 hours.
And then we, one of the Air Force guys said, do you want to call back? And he said, do you guys want to do a low pass?
Yeah, no, dude. And okay. I was on the plane, right? And I remember, like, they hit the back and we.
Yeah,
you know, and Lagenstein, I get off and what the hell are you guys doing? Because like they, you know, if you don't know, it looked like the plane was coming down for like a, you know,
something.
They were so mad at us, and we were like, woo,
And then so the what the low pass I guess is they is called like buzzing the tower. There's all kinds of things that that harkens back to in the military. And in the military you don't get in trouble. They got in trouble apparently, the pilots. There was someone waiting for them and said, we need you guys we need you guys to come this direction. And they were like,
it was one of those. That was like, you know, the year 2003, good decisions were not always being made.
You mean to say yes to the low pass?
Let's do it.
I also remember this, these guys were such, they wanted to check out what the plane could do. And I forget if it was after the low pass they were feeling ballsy, but they all of a sudden put it into a full vertical climb. And Trey and I were crushed to the floor.
That part I don't remember and being really excited about, you know.
Then they came out of it in a like a parabola at the
top.
You
had zero
and we were
G.
basically weightless at the top briefly. And that was amazing. And anyway, so we were psyched by that as well. That's always
I remember the first tour we did, like the first jet tour was 2003, you know, was the we opened in Vegas and then we did two in LA at the Forum. And then we did two Vegas shows, and you know, when we had a bus too, which was basically like the luggage bus, you know. And I remember being like, you know, we play the Forum, we're driving to the airport, and now that I live in LA, I know it's really close. And it's like, even on that 10-minute drive, we're all like, maybe we should have just taken the bus. What are we thinking? This is stupid, you know? You get on the plane, you're in Vegas in like 20 minutes. We're like, we're never to get on the thing again.
We are now a jet
famous,
band.
Yeah, the famous quote that Bert Goldstein said is like, no band tries out the plane, you know? Like, you know, you don't try it out. Like, you just do. You know,
like, you're going to go back.
You're going to get like, like, oh, no, you know?
How about some of those early Halloweens? I remember some of my best memories. I've never missed a Halloween.
Those were great because I remember the first one, you know, that was, again, that was one of those band ideas that was like, you know, a musical costume, you know, they just came out of it and it just turned out to be almost another, that's like a legacy building thing for them. I mean, it's changed Halloween for, especially that scene of music. It's like, you know.
Forever.
And like, I remember the White Album
one. Started with the White Album.
The White Album was the first one. And probably, you know, of the ones that were that I had done, I think probably the, like, compared to The Who and The Talking Heads and Velvet Underground, the White Album was probably the, not the most best executed, only because it's just, like, it's so based on the singing. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And it's, like, nothing against the singing. The Fish guys all sing really well, and they're one of the few bands that all four guys sing.
And know how to harmonize
correctly and everything. It's not, you know.
But you're not those guys.
You know? Like, you know, singing Blackbird is not easy, you know?
No.
You know?
I just remember being, it just went on forever. And
it was a long one.
And that was my first one.
I remember being like, not on any actual drugs, but feeling like I was when...
Right, because we were tired. And
when John came out and got naked in Revolution
Tucked them in, then he almost got arrested. Like, they didn't, like, the police came after him, you know? Like, you know.
You hear about Jim Morrison getting arrested. So they were decided to arrest John Fishman.
I mean, and that, so there was that one, and then The Who was the, I think, 95, which is Quadrophenia.
Chicago.
You know.
And we had the great one in Atlanta.
But well, that was the best one.
That was the best one. And you know what's funny is I remember, Trey could back this story up too, but like, I was like, Talking Heads, man. You know, it's like, you know, I was kind of more like the dummy who likes classic rock. Why don't you do Led Zeppelin, man? You know, and he's like, no, you know. And then it turned out it was the best one by far.
Yeah.
I mean, game-changing.
Agreed.
Game-changing, like, the whole thing, you know?
Yeah, it changed Fish forever.
Yeah. I mean, the way they were playing, like, if you look at that album and the way they played it, it really, like, the difference between 96 and 97's playing has a lot to do with, I think, that
learning
that record and that kind of thing. And
the amount of time they put into it.
And they just, you know.
Learning that, like, groove.
And they had Carl Perazzo from Santana and the horns and, like, you know, it's just, I mean, obviously Cross-Eyed is, like, you know, one of their top five songs. Like, but it was, like, it was so good. And you'll find this funny. This is a good story. Is that, like, when we did the Rolling Stone Fish cover shoot? You know. You know, we're at Trey's
outside.
House, and, like, you know, this guy, I think it was Martin Scholler, was photographer. He had all these setups, and they were all the kind of typical, like, Vermont ice fishing kind of. The guys weren't into it. Somehow this idea came, like, let's dress him up in tutus and stuff. And I was like, no, this is a bad idea. And Trey's like, no, no, this is what we should do. This is what we should do. You know, we should do this. And I'm like, this is a terrible idea. And he's like, remember Remain in Light? You thought that was a bad idea too. Like, and he kept saying that to me, you know? And I'm like, yeah, but I really think this is a bad idea.
So you were one for two.
Yeah, exactly.
What I remember about that, though, quickly was that in Atlanta, the Omni for that. The night before, we're supposed to have dinner and a party with the band. And Paluska and you and me and a few other people. They weren't a lot of people. And we were at dinner, and the band never shows up.
TiVo made the cut on that one?
Yeah, no. I just snuck in the door.
Maybe that's why the band didn't show up.
Yeah. TiVo's here.
So I hung out with Paluska, and... No, so Paluska then got a call from you or something. Yeah. They had to... Practice. I mean, am I remembering this right? They just played and played over and over because they weren't ready. They thought.
Yeah.
And then the next night, they, of course, blew the...
Yeah, I think that was the one where they were the most, like...
Nervous.
Because it was like they had a lot. The other ones, like The Who, I feel like had a horn section, maybe. I can't remember for some of those songs.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But this one had like a lot of moving parts. It was like, and it wasn't their style per se, you know?
Right.
And yeah, they totally nailed it.
I mean, it was a stretch.
And you know what's funny? Probably the worst song was like, And maybe it's always like this. It's like the ones, you know, like Once in a Lifetime was kind of like, yeah, you know what I mean? It was like, not that it was bad. It was just kind of like,
it's the big hit that you've heard. It's the big hit
that you've heard so much. It's hard to like kind of
make
that better, you know? Right. And then like, what was next? Loaded was 98. We skipped 97. And Loaded was 98.
That was Vegas?
Vegas. Yeah. And that was a good one too. I mean,
and I knew nothing about it.
Yeah.
It's funny because that's the one that like appears in all the interviews. Like, you know, everyone who listened to Loaded formed a band. It's like a Brian Eno quote or something.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, so Trey, I mean, and the entire band are such musicians and historians music-wise. I'm not.
Yeah, yeah, me neither.
And I really didn't know
that. We're all like, what are you going to do Zeppelin for?
You know, like... I didn't really know that album. Yeah. And of course, because... and this is the last time that I wanted to know what it was ahead of time, because it did ruin the surprise.
Right.
However, in this case, I was so glad that I knew it.
Yeah, because you can kind of go in and give yourself a little prep.
Yeah. It's a primer.
You know. I studied, but that was the last one. After that, I tried to be surprised.
Right. Yeah. And then of course the 2 nights later they did the Dark Side of the Moon thing.
Oh, the fake. Right. Don't miss the Sunday show.
Yeah, yeah. It wasn't even a Sunday. Everybody skipped Utah to go to Denver basically. They spend the night in Vegas, you know, and like
typical Trey, you know, to be like
if you look on a map, it's like it's easy to go to Denver. It's hard to go up and then back down to Denver.
I mean, I remember it's funny because like, you know, we always used to joke about doing things like that. Like, that was always a running gag. Like, oh, people are coming. Let's hurt them. And I think Eric Larson was the one who was like, you know, gave him the, you know, well, you should really hurt him. Do Dark Side of the Moon. And Trey's like,
great
idea. Yeah, okay, cool. Let's do it. And you're just kind of like, you say these things like, you know.
But did that imply that they had practiced that for Halloween as well?
No, they practiced it that day. November 2nd at the arena backstage.
Really?
You know? And this is like before, like, you know, you couldn't look up the lyrics on the internet. I'm writing them out on these giant pieces of paper. And, you know, like, you know, sometimes you think they're like saying one thing and they're not. And like, Trey's like, that's not the lyrics. That doesn't make any sense. I'm like, oh, yeah. You know? But it was like, so I had all these boards written out and everything. I mean, they literally learned that in 3 hours.
Wow.
Like, they learned it.
It's because it's ingrained in them because everyone's heard that song.
Still learn it as a band and actually pull it off pretty well.
Look around.
jumping on stage. Yeah. Springsteen.
Yeah.
How many times have you heard Born to Run?
Yeah, yeah.
500
yeah.
in your life? Maybe 600?
Right.
Try to sing all those words. No, forget it. So fucking hard.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Yeah.
Not that this is all about me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, Chumbawamba. How many times have you heard Chumbawamba? That
song? I'll tell you. I heard it a million times.
I stand up. I get knocked down. What am I saying? I don't know.
So Brad, you know, good, great, amazing stuff.
Yeah.
Fish climbed to an incredible peak.
Yeah.
Things started changing.
Right.
But there was something amazing happening, and it made Fish... backstage, it made it a place that people wanted to go.
Yeah.
And it's the clinic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
yeah,
but, I mean, here's what the thing. There? Well, here's the thing. It's like, I think the original impetus of the clinic, like a lot of times, like I read the book by, what's his name? Park or whatever. Park Pooter.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
And like Amy Skelton was like blaming everybody for us. Oh, that's why it went bad and this and that. It's like, look, first of all, Amy, it was your idea. Second of all, it was the band's idea. The band wanted to create an environment where their friends could come and have a great time, which I think, you know, take away all the things that happened about it that was wrong, you know, it was too much, whatever. But, you know, like, you knew if you were coming to a show, you were going to get taken care of, and you were going to have, like, the best night of your life in Albany or in Greensboro or wherever it was. It was like, you could see all, because, you know, that's Fish is about it was... As much as obviously it's about the music and all that, it's also about a community.
Well, I have to give credit where credit is due.
Yeah.
And Tebow and I talk about this all the time. Brad has this unbelievable, and I'm talking about you,
yeah.
Amazing memory for people's names and amazing memory for their circumstance and right. everything. Like, you go right. into a town, you know who's going to show up
right.
somehow. Like, no matter, and yeah. it could be friends of friends, and you know them
right.
all. You,
right.
you knew them all. So you're like the perfect...
Well, let me tell you, I know them all. It's because I used to type them all in the guest list. And it was like, you
eventually.
Know, oh, you know, Clippinger, comma, Phil, plus one, you know. You know? Otherwise, I would never remember that guy. No, well, but it's like...
No, but so the, you're, yeah. you became like this consummate host and became the connection
yeah.
for everyone who was right. an insider to Fish.
Right.
And it was really kind of refreshing.
But it was also like, I think the way we tried to set it up was like, it was a place where everybody who was friends... could go and hang out. And then if the band wanted to come say hi to them, they could they walk could. Down there
yeah.
and hang out. And it was not like a big deal, too, you know?
Yeah. That you guys, like and, Tom and I were friends of Trey's. And then,
yeah.
then we got to meet Mike's friends and Paige's friends and all right. of us became friends.
Yeah.
And it wasn't out of control in the beginning.
It was great. I remember the first one, well, one of the first ones we did was in Vegas. And we just put a bunch of booze back there. And like, that one got bad quick because it was like, you know, like... People were just back there, like, not even going out, like, just drinking hard liquor. Then we kind of switched it to beer, you know what I mean? You know?
Yeah,
and then
just
it was
beer
like,
and a cheese plate.
And then it got to be, obviously, then it became, like, it was like a status thing, you know? It was like, then it, that's when it got to friends of friends, and it got out of control. And,
right.
You know, but...
It was a gradual thing.
Originally, the idea was to create an environment that was fun, you know? And I think it did translate to the, like, you know... If Trey knew his friends were having a great time,
yeah.
it kind of like he didn't have to worry about it. You know, he wasn't getting a text saying or it might even be before text, but
it was.
He wasn't getting like a message like, "Hey, I'm out here with my five friends and no one's taking care of us." You know, it was a way you could put like there was it eliminated that like I have a laminate, you have a sticky kind of thing.
Yes,
you're know, all in the
put,
clinic.
You put everybody in the clinic, and you're
you just
happy.
Give someone a clinic pass. They show
yeah,
up.
Yeah. And it was like, you know, I never felt like that was the reason for the problems, you know? But, yeah, there might have been some unsavory individuals in there, but they would have been in there anyway, you know? Like, it got to be too much because there got to be too many people.
I heard rumors right. of, like, at Coventry that yeah. the guest list for the clinic was in the thousands.
Yeah, I mean...
Is that right?
Probably, but nobody could get there because it was under mud.
That's right. Yeah.
But it was, you know, it was kind of like, yeah, it was, but, you know, we had a lot of friends. What can
yeah,
you say?
Exactly.
You
know? I know. Tons of friends, and they're all going to be there.
Yeah.
My favorite thing was we'd be sitting in the clinic, and Brad would walk by and lean in and go, 5 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I mean, it was just what it was like. I always felt that part of it. Like, theoretically, you know, you could make the argument that Fish's best creative years on stage improvising or whatever was probably 97 through 2000, you know? I mean, that's what I would say, personally. And those are the clinic years. I mean, this is not necessarily... You know,
it's not. There's no causality necessarily.
Yeah, but
it's, it helped, you know, create the family
atmosphere. And I think there's always this kind of like feeling of like there's this sort of myth like, oh well, if you were the drug dealer, you could get in the clinic or whatever. Like it wasn't that. No. Like people weren't like going in. You know, it just. Like, I think a lot of that was sort of overblown, you know? I mean,
yeah.
You know, it's like, those guys were drinking shots of tequila and going on stage. They weren't, like, you know, getting polluted, you know?
Right.
You know?
No, I mean, like, anything like that has a potential, any automatic party at a concert has a potential for abuse.
But it was more like, you know, like, I mean, all of us would remember those times of, like, you walk away from it and just be like...
That was amazing.
Like, yeah. I had the best... That was, like, one of the best nights of my life. And,
yeah.
Right. You know, and I think...
And continually, T-Bone, and any friend that I brought there, including my mom...
Yeah.
Right. Would always just...
Oh, yeah. My mom?
Yeah.
Had great. The best night at a concert ever in their life.
My parents would be in there with my brother.
Your brother was always
My brother, I was like, it was like a celebrity or something.
That's right.
Like
Ernie and Eva.
Yeah, you know.
It was great. It was really, really fantastic. Yeah. When it worked well, it was fantastic.
Yeah, it was a good idea that kind of just got out of control.
Yeah. You also were treading this fine line because it opens the door for impropriety.
Yeah.
So you were treading a weird line between being a tour manager,
yeah.
but also being best friends with the guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And so because of the the door that was open for possible improper things to occur, when things did sort of go bad and people were kind of like looking maybe how to change it, you had a target on your back.
Yeah, of course. And I always knew that would kind of go that way in a sense. And I could have done things differently probably and better, but I didn't know, you know, like I wasn't like, the way I looked at it was like, if you take Trey in particular, like he wasn't lonely, but you know, it's a lonely existence out there to be in your hotel room by yourself. You want to go do stuff, you know, and I looked at it as more like, you know, I was kind of the guy who was there for him through a lot of it, you know? And I was so caught up in it too. I thought I was rock star, you know? I was living the dream, you know?
Well,
like,
it was amazing. Great. Yeah, and you guys are,
you know?
You couldn't not be friends. You guys, your personalities are so similar.
Yeah, and all of them, you know? I was kind of, and like Paige and I were really close, you know? Like he lived right near me. And like, you know, Paige was kind of, sort of the opposite of Trey in that sense, but like Paige is like he's like the guy who, like, if you actually need something, like, you call Paige, like, he can get it done.
Super reliable,
just like a reliable,
he seems that way to
like
me.
A stand up guy, you know what I mean? Like, totally. The most stand up person, you know what I mean? Like, just kind of, Well, here's like this is I always used to make the joke about like bus call would be at like 4 o'clock to go from the hotel to the venue, right? So, what would happen is Trey would come down first. And Trey and Paige would come down kind of like 3:55, 3:50. They'd be sitting there, you know, looking at the clock. You know, then 4 o'clock comes and they're like, well, they're not here. We're going to go get some coffee or something, right? Then Mike comes down 4:05, 4:10, you know. Well, where is everybody?
Yeah.
Oh, they're not here. Oh, I'm going to go do this, right? You know. And it's like, then now it's 4:20. There's nobody here, you know.
Meanwhile, Fishman
is still like, yeah, I'll be right down. Hangs up the phone, you know, like... Then he would eventually come down at like 4:30, and the other guys would be either just coming back or not back yet. He's like, well, why were you rushing me? They're not even here. I'm like, they're not here because you're 30 minutes late. You know, like, you know? But Fishman was the guy who, like, you can never be mad at that guy.
No.
Like, you could literally go in there, steal your wife and your kids, and you just be like, oh, well, Fishman, what are you
doing? Okay, it happens.
You know, like, he just has that, like, you know, like, and he one time, he made a bet that he would never be late for the bus again, you know?
Right.
Like,
He was like,
oh, I'm just going to stay on the bus. I'm never getting off, so I'll never be late, you know? And then, like, within, like, you know, 2 days, he was late for the bus, you know? Like, he just decided to go into a hotel room. Then he blamed it on, he didn't get a wake-up call at the proper moment. It was a whole thing, you know? And he just got really angry, you know? He's like, he also, this one, he made a bet. When I first started working for them, it was like, I went up to Burlington and I had like, I was like living in the guest room of like Paul, Trey and Fishman's house, you know, as a fan. I'm like, this is so weird, you know, living in this crappy house in Winooski with these guys. And Fishman made a bet that he would never watch TV for like 1,000 days, right? You know, and Trey's like, you're whatever you want, you know, and Paul's just like, you know, so you know, like an hour later, we're just in the house and Fishman's just sitting there like watching the news. And he's, Trey's like, what are you doing? He's like, fuck. You know, he forgot, you know, like, you know, I mean, and you know, that guy's just, you know, the Fishman, you know, just get away with murder.
Hey, Brad, I like mixing music into my podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
And we mentioned a few, obviously, you know, standout concerts, so right. I'll probably put some of that in.
Yeah, yeah.
But there was this particular period that you and I talk about often when we talk. And that is summer of 98.
Yeah, yeah.
There was something magic that happened. And I think you had a lot to do, or at least you were there to witness the band's discussion. And this, the funny thing, it's kind of like, it, you know, you see this later, and even as far in the future as Baker's Dozen, the same kind of discussion. And what we're talking about is summer of 98, which some people call the summer of covers.
Summer of covers.
And so where did that start and how? Because
I remember,
It culminated with
Terrapin.
Terrapin.
Obviously. So yes. I feel like the first one was maybe like in Pittsburgh. They did the Pavement song. Was that Pittsburgh? Because I know August 1st they did, it was Alpine Valley. They did Been Caught Stealing with the trampolines.
You know, I look back in time and I think maybe it began with the debut of You Better Believe It Baby in Albuquerque at the Starplex Amphitheater in Dallas on 7/26/98.
Right, yeah. And I remember, to me, it always felt like there was a week there, which started with the Jane's Addiction one.
Okay.
And that was August 1st in Alpine Valley.
Okay, here we are. Alpine Valley.
Been Caught
Ramble
Stealing.
Ramble On.
Oh, right. Ramble On and then Been Caught Stealing.
Been Caught Stealing.
Was encore.
As an encore.
My idea was to bring out the trampolines during that because it has that... So that was kind of fun. And then was Pittsburgh after?
Noblesville, Indiana. And a Fish debut here is...
They did a Smashing Pumpkins song.
I Get a Kick Out of You.
Yeah, and they did Rhinoceros on one of those.
Rhinoceros comes up in the next one, same run.
Yeah.
Also in Noblesville.
Yeah.
Which is Deer Creek.
Right, right.
So this is 8/3/98. Yeah. They did Rhinoceros and Smashing Pumpkins.
Yeah, yeah.
Running with the devil.
Yeah, yeah.
Good memory.
That was a kind of a. That one wasn't as good as some of the other ones, you know, because it's you know Van Halen, you know. Yeah, yeah.
And then I don't think they had anything at Walnut Creek in Raleigh, North Carolina. All right, Fish debut at Meriwether Post.
Sweet Jane.
And Sabotage, right?
And Sabotage was the
We were there.
That place went crazy.
That was unbelievable.
Yeah, and they kind of did like a perfect rendition of it, you know.
Trey's voice.
Yeah, I mean, you know,
it's hilarious.
Because it's like finally a band that sings that can't sing, like you know, the Beastie Boys. You know?
This is the perfect band.
For totally. And
I don't think I knew Trey's voice could do that.
Yeah, and that was incredible. I mean, I remember the crowd just.
Freaked out.
Losing their mind.
Yeah. I was with you
because
and
that
Andrew.
Song is. I mean, that song is such a great song. I mean, everybody knows. You know, like, you know, it's just this explosion. You know.
Oh,
And I was so I didn't know what it was.
Yeah, it
wasn't my music.
Everybody but Tebow.
What is this?
Yeah, Tebow thought it was Big Black Furry Creature from Mars.
No, come on, I know that one.
I told Tebow it was Eminem's friend.
Yeah. He'd already wrote BBFCN
on my ticket.
Yeah.
And then, of course, Virginia Beach.
Yeah.
And this is now 8998.
Yeah, and it's funny because this story, I remember, I'll never forget it because it was like, Trey and I were walking in Norfolk, like we were in the hotel there, we were walking on the wall. I said, yeah, it's hard to believe Jerry's been dead for 3 years now. And this wasn't even like I was trying to get him up. I never thought he was even in the realm of, you know.
Never had been, right, at that point?
Well, since he's just, early years. And he's like, we should play a Dead song tonight. And I was like, yeah. He's like, well, what should we play? I was like, I don't, you know, like, St. Stephen or something. He goes, well, how about Terrapin? We'll do Terrapin. And I was just like, you know, I would never throw that one out there, you know, because it's like...
so difficult.
It's like 9 verses and all these changes 13 and this minutes and that, and you know?
Yeah.
And I'm just sitting there, I'm walking with him, and I'm just like, holy shit, if they actually do this, this will be insane.
Did you run to go get the...
Well, I had it. Like, I think somewhere. I had an iPad. I think iPods were around, but they're like, they couldn't go online and write the lyrics, you know, and I had to listen to it. And I wrote them all out. I spent hours doing it, you know?
Really quickly until you don't, they don't change their mind, kind
of
thing.
And they learned it off of this version that I had on. I had like a DAT tape of 11-1-77, the Cobo Arena in Detroit. That's how they learned it off of that version.
Oh, cool.
And I remember like they literally spent 2 hours before the show. They spent more time on Terrapin than they did on Dark Side of the Moon. you know, because that was the same year. 98 was Dark Side of the Moon, you know? It was like, and it was funny because me and Eric Larson and Paige's ex-wife Sophie were just sitting outside the dressing room listening to him in the practice room playing it.
All three huge deadheads.
Yeah. It's like, you know, so, and the funniest thing was, is like, Virginia Beach has a really strict curfew of 10 o'clock, right? Uh-huh. And so, you know, we all knew this moment was coming, or the three of us, and a couple other people knew, you know?
Right.
But... you know, so it's like 9:45 and they're supposed to play Chalk or something like that was, you know, and Trey goes, he starts yem, and I'm just like, oh, great, now I'm gonna play it. You know, I was like pacing around backstage. The promoter's yelling at me about the curfew or whatever. So they finish yem, right? And then they start like Sweet Adeline or something like that, or Amazing Grace or one of those after yem. And they're like singing it in the right to Eric Larson. I'm like, no, they're singing to Larson. Oh my God, they're not going to do Terrapin, you know? Like, fuck, you know? And then they come off stage, you know? And then they're like, all right, let's do it. You know, they walk back on. The promoter's like, you got to finish it. I'm like, yeah, okay, I'll tell them whatever, you know? I was fucking telling them, no way, you know? And
so you enjoy myself, Frankenstein, Chalk Dust Torture.
Yeah.
Hello, My Baby.
Right.
Ended set two.
Yeah. They just, because I think.
Now it's late.
Yeah, it's like fucking 10:45 or something, you know? And
9:45.
Hello, My Baby. That's what it was. Yeah, 9:45. And then they go back out there, and like the weirdest thing, I swear to God, in between the like 2 minutes they were off stage, like this brand new crescent moon had dropped right in between the roof and of the amphitheater and the lawn. I mean, it was the weirdest fucking thing. And then the video screens, like, which, you know, you record the whole thing, cut out for that song. You know, and when they started it, the crowd was like this, like...
gradual murmur.
And it was just like...
that explosion.
It was just like the... I mean, it was amazing.
Seem familiar.
this roar.
It still gets me chills.
It was a tidal wave.
Yeah.
It came from behind.
And then even like backstage afterwards, like all the crew were hanging out, like people who don't know anything about the Dead or anything.
Yeah.
It just was like that moment of like, I always felt like it was that moment that they put the Dead behind them by doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
Do you know what I mean? It was like, it was kind of like saying, yes, here they are. They're amazing. You know, we're going to play this song.
And then move forward.
And then
yeah,
we can all get along now or whatever.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Because it was like, you know, then it was like, you know, Phil and Friends, all these kind of things. And then all of a sudden, Trey's Jerry and Fairly Well. You know? Like,
you know? It was a beautiful nod and right at the right time.
Yeah, and the perfect song. I mean, it was kind of like, because it'd be it, like, you know, I think back on it, it was like playing St. Stephen would have been whatever. I mean, it would have been cool, but like not playing Terrapin.
Right.
I mean, that's kind of, you know, that's the song.
It's also as Fish, I mean, like, Fish required a lot of work to do it, and so people gave it that extra respect.
And you also had to get it right. Like, it wasn't like running with the devil, like, let's run through this and muck and we can play it, and you know, whatever. It was like, you know, and it just was like, I mean, that whole. And then I remember people wanting them to play it again and thinking they'd play it at maybe at Lemon Wheel or It or whatever. I mean,
never again.
Yeah. Yep.
No. And then, very few Dead covers that I can think of.
I don't think any.
Maybe never.
Well, unless Bob sat in or whatever.
Right.
But, like, that's another funny thing. Like, when I can tell some of the Grateful Dead stories if we want to sort of talk about it. Like, you know, like, I remember, because Trey was the one who was probably most into the Dead, I think, when he was younger than the other guy. The other guys were into it, too. Mike, actually, too.
Okay.
And, when we were in Europe in 97 in Amsterdam, you know, the Back of the Worm night, you know, we were at that bar, the Gray Area. You remember that place?
Yes.
You know? And it was like, Trey and Seacott were off doing their own thing.
Yeah, you know? they were
literally riding the worm. And they came back in, and like, there was this version of China Doll playing over the thing. It was one of those moments in the you know, journey that Trey was like, he's like weeping, you know, like, so good, China Doll. Yeah. Oh my God. Yeah. It was kind of like the beginning of getting them back into it, you know?
Yeah.
And then
there's
like,
that peak, and China Doll is like, just a little.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Was that when he was crying?
Probably.
That's the part that gets me.
And when you get invited to do the Phil and Friends thing, you know? And, you know, it's like Phil Lesh's comeback and this and that. And
so
like,
this is 99.
99, yeah. And, you know, it was like, we go to rehearse with Phil, and it's just the funniest thing was like,
where was this taking place?
The rehearsal was in Belmarin Key, like Novato in California.
Okay.
At the Grateful Dead's like warehouse, right?
Cool.
And yeah, it was amazing. You know, people like me and Corona are just like, this is like the greatest thing
ever. Was there cool art and stuff around?
Not really art. It was like baskets full of relics that they weren't taking care of, you know? Like, there was one like laundry basket that had literally petals. Like, just petals. Like,
Jerry's,
they were like,
just Jerry's
petals. Bob Weir's, like, Bob. All old petals that he tried out, you know?
Oh, my God.
And then,
that's a gold mine.
Steve
right
Parrish was Jerry's roadie, you know, he was there. And, like, they had this trailer out in the back where they would, like, hang out. And, like, if Phil needed something, he'd have to speak into a microphone and say, hey, can you guys come in here? And they'd just be like, oh, fucking Phil, you know, they're all cranky and stuff, you know? And, like, this trailer was, like, I mean, it was, you never see that. They had this poisonous frog that they would feed mice, you know, and then like every now and then the Hell's Angels would come in and you're just sitting there like, oh my God, these guys are going to kill me. So Parrish brought out Jerry's guitar, like, and it hadn't been opened since Jerry had died out of the case. And he opens it because they really liked Trey. Trey like charmed those guys like 2 seconds. They thought he was the greatest. And,
so unopened for four years. Oh my God.
They open it or three or something, and, you know, and like it was like that scene in Pulp Fiction where
it glowed.
And Trey put it. He let Trey put it on.
Oh my God.
And like, you know, Trey starts tuning it. We're like, don't break the strings, you know, like
pop.
And he just starts playing it like for like a minute, and then he takes it off.
Oh man!
And it was like before you had cell phones or whatever, so there's like no photo of it or anything. But it was like the coolest moment ever. You know what I mean?
The best, yeah.
But then there was moments of like Phil, you know, like, you know, Phil, he's old, you know, and like he wanted to do Mr. Tambourine Man, and like he had this way of singing, "Hey, Mr. Tambourine Man, bless," you know, like
a Jamaican.
Yeah, yeah. And you can just see Trey Page just go, "What is why don't we do this song?
Talking about Phil. We'll sing it.
Yeah. But even like that was in like Terrapin, we're like, let Trey sing it. And Phil wanted to alternate verses. Like, oh, God, you know. But
politics.
You know. And then, so then we went to a barbecue at Phil's house. And Bobby came over, you know. And this was during as a football fan, the 49ers were, had like Jeff Garcia as the quarterback. And I said to Bobby, I was like, do you wear the Garcia jersey to the games? And he goes like, I never thought of that. And I thought to myself, how could, that's all I think about. How could you never think of that? You know, like, you know, like, you know, come on.
It's bizarre.
Yeah. You know, like, you know, he just like, Bobby's amazing. He's like a, he's sort of like a slow moving car.
So, well, that's an amazing story. And then of course the show itself came off pretty good.
Yeah, it was great. I mean, it was like, it was funny because, then we set up like the Dead used to set up with, like the crew was like right behind the band. That's how the Deads were, you know? And Trey was really into it. Like, he's like, the next, because then I think the next thing we had was, I don't know if it was Fish shows or Tab shows. He's like, we got to set up like that, you know? It just looked so fake and dumb. You know what I mean? Because like Haddon didn't really get it and didn't want to do it. And, you know, like, but like the Dead crew would like, you know, they were literally, the they're right behind.
They're
like,
always standing.
You know, like the band's playing and then, you know, the one guy's like shaving and it's like, you know, looking at his road case and stuff. You know, it's like, what's going on up here, you know?
That's like the perfect reason. That's why they have a side stage.
Yeah, yeah. You know, like, nobody
for those guys.
To shave?
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, you know.
Well, that's amazing. Brad, we've kept you, this is a working day for you.
Kind of.
And so we're going to see Primus tonight, courtesy of you. Thank you. That's awesome. But thanks so much for indulging us.
This could have gone on for 8 more hours.
Yeah. No, I had a great time. Thanks. I'm glad I got to do it.
Yeah, really great. And this is part one. We'll probably do a part two.
Let's do part two.
Yep. All right. Thanks, Brad.
Osiris.
This podcast is In the Loop, the Legion of Osiris Podcasts. Osiris is creating a community that connects people like you with live experiences and podcasts about artists and topics you love. Get in the loop at osirispod.com.